Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for May 29th, 2011. I'm sorry that I didn't have some Huckabee Easy theme music to bring us into the show, since we're going to discuss that great tribute band later, but we just had our regular intro music. But from out in San Francisco, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello. Greetings from the
Catherine,
Bay City.
I hope, you know, that's vague enough that no one will track you down. I know some people, you know, like, don't tell anybody where I'm at. But, you know, that's a pretty broad area. Yeah. And then, as always, from Somerville, Georgia, welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes. Well, big week this week. Usually at the summertime around a holiday weekend like Memorial Day, everything's so dead it's like I'm having to just find topics. But this week I had to cut some down. And just a lot of interesting news we'll discuss tonight. In about 10 minutes we're going to have Sherry from Left in Alabama to come on and talk about legislator from the Tuscaloosa area switching parties and why he did that, maybe a little other Alabama stuff. But the first story we're going to discuss, and probably the reason we're going to discuss this, is because he's a friend of the show. He's been on the show probably, it seems like, about five times, maybe even more. Representative Rashad Taylor, he's been on before he was a representative, when he was running as a representative. Anytime we want him to come on, he'll be there for us. He made a pretty big announcement this week, really more for his personal life than his political life, in my opinion. Catherine, tell us about that.
Well, apparently there was a former friend of a friend who sent an email around to Georgia legislators outing, as they say in the community, Representative Taylor as being gay, and he made a public press conference with a number of legislators and his family members and friends, explaining that yes, in fact, he is gay, and that he has struggled with revealing this for years, but because it was going to become public, and He's not that he's ashamed of it or has any concern about that, but it was just something that he had chosen to keep private, and so that was the news. I think all of us in Georgia have a lot of respect for Representative Taylor, and he's my representative, and I have always had a very good relationship with him. He's very responsive. He's very responsible. He's not a hypocrite. He's never voted in any way that would cast any doubt about his support for everyone in his district, gay, straight, black, white, whatever, you know. So I don't see this as a big story, except that it has been all over the news and the blogs and Facebook, and there's been some rather harsh comments about it, and I just want to be the first on Kudzu Vine to say that I support him in any way that I can, and I have the utmost respect for him.
Yeah, and I think on the Peach Pundit, there was the one guy that posted about it, you know, wanted to really bring a lot of cloud of scandal around it that was pretty sketchy. I don't know that there was really anything. He was tying some pieces together to get somewhere. And then I think you're saying on Block for Democracy, some people were almost maybe to his left criticizing him. Interestingly enough, the Atlanta Constitution actually allowed comments on this, which I was kind of surprised. But the comments were very much like, and so, you know, and it was, sounds like it was kind of the middle road in a positive way opinion. And this is the mainstream, you know, press commenting on it. And people were like, okay, and how does that affect me? And took a very modern view of it, if you will. Tim, your thoughts on this?
Well, I thought for one thing, it was unfortunate that this had to come out in the way that it did, because it denied Representative Taylor the chance to talk about this on his own terms, I guess is the best way to put it. The person who sent out these scurrilous emails that Catherine was talking about should be ashamed of themselves. That being said, I do wonder if there will be any political implications, because the average voter might think, you know, something that was hit or something like that, for reasons of electability. I don't know. I think Representative Taylor reaching out to his constituents personally, though, I got to be with Catherine on this. I don't think it's going to be that big of a story in the long run.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people, when they come out of the closet, so to speak, and I don't know if that's the appropriate metaphor or not, I don't even know where that exactly came from, because I don't know who exactly hangs out in closets. But nevertheless, people always probably wonder, you know, if I tell people what's going to change, and I want Rashad to know this, that as far as the kudzu vine's concerned, nothing's going to change. We love having you come on and talk to us about politics, and you're welcome anytime. You know, I guess the only thing that's changed is people know one thing about your sex life. Well, that's not anything we discuss on the kudzu vine anyway. There's shows for that, and we ain't that show. So come on, talk about politics. I mean, so nothing's changed for our purposes. Now, as far as, like, politically, how will this affect anything? Well, one, he may be in some very different-looking district than he is now, you know, because it's up to redistricting. So who could even predict how that would affect him? You know, if his district looked very much like it is now, Catherine, I guess you could speak to how it would affect him. Although, if a lot of voters think like you do, it certainly wouldn't hurt him. In some quarters, it might even help him, if you will.
Well, I mean, I think that I doubt that his district's going to change very much. I mean, it's a, you know, in-town Atlanta district. I mean, I suppose it could change marginally, but it's, you know, it's right in town. It's surrounded by other, you know, strongly Democratic districts, so I can't imagine it would change that much. And he is very well-liked and very well-known in his district, and I can't imagine that it would affect it. I don't know. I don't do polling. I don't know. It's not my impression that those were the concerns that he had about not talking about it. I think it was just a personal decision. I think it was more involved his family and his you know, personal relationships than it did his political ambitions. So
yeah,
but I agree with Tim. It's very unfortunate that someone that he wasn't allowed to do this on his own terms, in his own time, in his own way. And I think that's something that it's very unfortunate that anyone would act in a way that prohibited him from doing it his own way. And it's just a shame.
Yeah, I mean,
but
I
support him in any way.
Yeah, in this time, day and age, I think in this case where a single man, you know, or a single woman is gay and they've not let people know, you know, I guess way back when people have been like, oh, what a scandal, and this is this horrible thing you've put on this person. But now if someone outs someone when they didn't want to be outed, it's almost like they're the bad guy. So I'm kind of – I mean, I'm surprised. I don't know who this person is, but they may suffer the repercussions. Well, in court of public opinion, because this is not a guy that was married with kids that's affecting anybody in any way like that. It's not like he's, you know, because that gets a little
dicey. It's not like he's been living a lie or being a hypocrite or, you know, doing any of those things. But,
So, you know, we've said our piece on it. I think if we didn't, and Rashad being such a friend of the show, people would say, hey, we're not tackling issues we should be tackling. So, you know, we've talked about that. So I'm going to go ahead and check the board here and see if Sherry is in with us yet, because we're going to talk about another switch, if you will, but this will be a switch of politics with political leanings being the factor, if you will. And Sherry's not quite in with us yet, but we may be a little early. I just don't want everybody to hear all this background noise in the hall tonight. But we can probably pick up another topic
until Sherry calls in. I sent y'all a list, but I tell you what, let's go ahead and talk about Herman Cain and his viability. And, you know, we've talked about it, and I think the reason we talk about it is the guys from Georgia. You know, some of us may have actually seen him at some political forum at some time. So we find him maybe a little more interesting than people from the other 49 states would. But apparently some polling is showing the guy in low double digits, you know, almost in a, you know, win, play, show kind of ranking. And actually one poll had him below Gingrich, which now people would probably say he's past Gingrich, if you will. But Nate Silver says in some kind of Tea Party universe, there is some viability to Herman Cain. Tim, were you surprised that the New York Times political analyst spent ink on this guy?
Nope. You might remember I told you on here a couple of weeks ago that I thought something was going on with Herman Cain, because a lot of the Republicans that I've talked to, and these are some of them are mainstream, you know, conservatives, not teabagger types, from other states and stuff. They love this guy. He gives them those red meat kind of speeches and stuff that they just love. You got to remember, David, it's a weak field out there of Republicans right now, and I think he's moved a bit into the vacuum that was created when, like, Huckabee and Trump and some of these people, the parties. And I think he's gone from the 2 to 5% range to around 10%. I think he's moved up into the high middle of the pack now. And, you know, I still don't think there's any way he can get the nomination, but I do think he's going to make some noise if he chooses to run the gamut of the whole gamut of the primary season.
Yes. Now, as we were discussing this, Sherry called in, so we want to welcome her. But, Catherine, I know you're going to remind me to get back to Herman Cain, because during the week I did research. Because, of course, they describe Herman Cain as a pizza mogul. So I wanted to find out what exactly a pizza mogul was. So I did a research, and I found the Godfather pizza locations in Georgia, and I may be being a little loose with my plurals there, and I'll tell you why after we talk to Sherry about Alabama politics, probably maybe even in the next second half hour, what have you. But remind me to get back to that, Catherine. But right now we want to welcome in from left in Alabama, probably one of the smartest people on Alabama politics, Mooncat Sherry. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you. I'm happy to be with you.
Yes. Well, Alabama have been a little bit quiet, at least from folks from outside Alabama. I know when it's your home state, it's never quiet. But you had a representative, state representative from the Lamar County, it looked like it was a little bit west of Tuscaloosa, switch parties from being a Republican to a Democrat. This is Daniel Bowman of Sulligent, and I may have mispronounced some of that.
I think that's right. But he switched parties,
and it doesn't seem like it would be a politically advantageous switch. It seems like it's more on principle. What can you tell us about this, Sherry?
Well, that's how I read it, too. It's somewhat on principle, and the backstory there is that the Republicans in the House, especially in the Senate as well, but really in the House, are very hard-line, the leadership is. And they've leaned on these folks really hard on some tough votes, especially regarding teachers and the Alabama Education Association. And I think they just this guy just bowed up and said, "I'm not dealing with this strong arm stuff anymore." Which you got to give him credit for.
Yeah, and I'm actually a little bit familiar with this district. Jim Spearman, who was y'all's executive director for a while, ran in this district back around 2002 and actually did the Webb part of the race. And remember Lamar County well, so it had been pretty much this district. I don't know if y'all have been through redistricting like Georgia and Texas and other southern states have been. But so this is pretty much the same district, and it was a Republican-held district at that time that a very hard-working candidate like Jim Spearman couldn't turn. So I know that this district
leans Republican, and obviously with redistricting coming, the Republicans could give him the worst district possible. What has he said about his political future since he switched?
He hasn't said much about his political future. It's like you said before, this is apparently all on principle, not on politics. I don't see any political upside for him. I mean, he was a member of the majority. One person switching is not going to change that. You would need another dozen Republicans to switch to Dems to have a Democratic majority. I think you may be looking at a different district, though, because this district was held by a Democrat up until last November. So this fella unseated a Democrat that had been like a three-termer. So you're probably looking at the next district over.
And that's why we have you on the show, because you're the Alabama political expert, not me.
Well, I just looked it up, too.
Oh, so you'd have to tell on yourself? Well, Sherry, I'm not on here by myself. I've got Tim and Catherine's, because, of course, there's other states I'm not experts at either. And you never know that Tim and Catherine are experts on a lot of things. So let me let them ask some questions as well.
Sure.
Tim, you want to go first?
Sure.
Go ahead, Catherine.
Sure,
my bad. Not. Yeah.
Go
ahead, Catherine.
Me? Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Catherine.
Thanks, Sherry. It's nice to hear from you again.
Thank you.
I noticed in the article that I read, it was rather brief, that there were 10 other Republicans that voted in the same way as this gentleman about this legislation. Can you give us a little bit of information about that legislation that they were opposed to?
Okay, it's the revamping the tenure rules for teachers. And it's something that Republicans ran on last year, and they ran hard on it, and there were a few examples that they used. There was a teacher that was convicted of, I can't remember what the person was convicted of, but actually serving time in prison and still drawing their paycheck because apparently the tenure law made it just virtually impossible to get rid of the person, even after conviction. So lots of people realized the tenure law needed to be revamped and reformed. But what the Republicans did is they went way beyond what anybody expected them to do in changing the tenure law. Now, tenure still exists, but even tenured teachers can be fired for a variety of causes, and there is no appeal. It's the teachers that I know say it's going to take us back to the days when, if the principal's cousin needed a job, the principal is just going to fire some teacher to hire the cousin. You know, it's pretty bad. And teachers have been up in arms and have been calling their legislators, and I'm sure Representative Bowman was one of the ones that was getting a lot of calls saying, you can't do this to us. We didn't, a lot of teachers voted Republican. But they did not expect what they have gotten out of the Republican legislature.
And those other, so there were 9 other Republicans. So I think David made a good point earlier that, do you think any of those other Republicans might switch? Or is it weakening their is it making them less strong, do you think?
I think it is, and I'm hearing that there actually is potential that a handful more might switch. In fact, some Democrats that I know are talking about, how do we deal with these party switchers? Do we welcome them? I mean, nobody really loves a party switcher. It's nice when they're coming your way, but you do sort of wonder a little bit how strong they are. But I think there could be some more switch, and the Republicans have a supermajority, which means they have enough legislators in the House and in the Senate to get to that
do whatever they want
requirement. Yeah, they can do basically if they can hold their entire caucus together. And they, like I said, they have really been tough holding their people's feet to the fire on these votes. They can do anything they want, but you know, you lose a few, and you lose that supermajority, which could be important down the road. It's not going to help this year. The session has got 3 or 4 days left, and everything is pretty much, they've done most of the damage that they're going to do right now. But for the next 3 years, it will matter if they lose that supermajority. And I'm not sure if this guy did that or not. I was trying to get the exact numbers, and it's really close. Whether he may have been the one that gets rid of their supermajority.
Okay, Tim, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, Sherry, I got to ask this. Was there any inkling of an idea that this switch was coming, or did it just suddenly come out of nowhere?
People at my level had no idea it was coming. Now, I think people, the leadership in the Democratic caucus had the idea that it was coming and had been talking to him, had known that there were some Republicans who were very unhappy where they were, very unhappy with what they were being asked to vote on, didn't like, you know, the way it was. You know, it was such a sweep in Alabama last November. There are people in the legislature that never expected to be elected, that were not prepared to be elected. You know, they ran against, I'm not saying that Representative Bowman is one of them, but there were people that ran against incumbents that had no clue they could ever win. And so they've gone down there with really very little idea of what it's like in the legislature, how things are done, how they whip votes. And it's kind of a culture shock for some of these folks, I think.
Yeah, I want to read you a statement that the House Speaker made, just the first sentence. And he said, "It was clear early on in the session that Mr. Bowman was not aligned ideologically with the reform-minded Republican majority." Was he just shooting from the hip and talking there? Had Representative Bowman made some other votes, you know, with the Democrats or something?
Yeah, there are several of the House Republicans who have not gone along with a lot. Ever since the Republicans took power, and they actually took office pretty much the day after the election in November, and they had a special session last December and passed a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They have gone after the Alabama Education Association because mm-hmm. there is kind of a split in the Republican Party in Alabama. There
mm-hmm.
is the Speaker of the House, Mike Hubbard, who was formerly the chairman of the Republican Party, and he's the one who planned and worked for a number of years to bring about this all these Republican victories. And the gubernatorial nominee was supposed to be Bradley Byrne, who was right in there. You know, they were close. They felt the same way about teachers, about charter schools, about Alabama Education Association. Well, that didn't work out for them. And AEA actually spent millions keeping Bradley Byrne out of the governor's office. And there's a Republican there, but he's a more moderate Republican. And there are some more moderate Republicans in the legislature. And there's kind of the divide between the moderates and the really hardliners, and Hubbard is one of the really hardliners.
Well, one final question, and then I'll throw it back to David, because it looks like something may be happening to y'all that we have been seeing over here in Georgia, and that is, you know, the Republicans are firmly in charge here, but there has been a whole lot of infighting, a lot of struggling for power within the party leadership, and it's kept a lot of stuff from getting done. do you think that sort of thing is going to be happening in your legislature? Or?
I do. I think it's been going on behind the scenes, and I really think that this party switch may embolden some of the other Republicans who are not happy with the. It's classic overreach. You know, they got elected on a certain agenda, and they are doing some of those things, but they're going way beyond what anybody thought they would do. And people are unhappy, and these legislators are getting a lot of phone calls. When they're, you know, in their communities, they're hearing from people. They're especially hearing from teachers who are taking it on the chin. And there's a lot of teachers, you know, and they vote. I think that it's going to be harder and harder for them to twist those arms as time goes on. And this switch, and if two or three, four more switch, I think they're going to have to start pulling back a little bit on what they were planning to do.
Okay, thank you, Sherry. David?
Yeah, Sherry, you mentioned overreach, and we've been seeing in a lot of states, Florida, Ohio, Wisconsin, they talk about buyer's remorse of the voters. Are there voters in Alabama that are starting to say, I voted for these guys to take power, meaning the Republicans, and are like, I didn't know they were going to go this far, and might come back to the Democratic camp as soon as this election year?
Oh, yeah, I feel sure of it. I feel sure they will. I think, and teachers in Alabama are the poster children for that. Teachers had been Democratic voters up until, you know, solid Democratic voters up until a couple of elections ago, and then there was Republicans started talking about the need for reform and the need for more transparency, and this is all true. Things were not great here. You know, the Democrats that were running the legislature made mistakes. They did not do some things that needed to be done. But the folks that voted the Republicans in did not expect the sweeping changes, and really especially toward educators. It's like there's a vendetta because of what AEA did to Bradley Byrne. They helped the other Republican in the runoff and got Byrne out of the running for governor. And that was personal to folks like the Speaker of the House and the people that were close to him. And they're taking it out of a teacher's hide.
Yeah, well, that's going to be interesting to watch. Now, obviously, in your state, it's another 3+ years before the constitutional officers are up. You don't even have a U.S. Senate race for another, I guess, till 2016. So I guess the legislative elections and then congressional elections will be the first chance voters will have to tell how they feel. But let's talk about that. Actually, Jeff Sessions does come up in 2014, but that's even after the presidential election. But as far as redistricting, which will be the congressional level, and that is a little different, y'all are not gaining or losing seats, correct?
That's right.
But you probably are going to see some population shifts within your state. How much difference will the lines be, do you think? Do you think they're going to make some pretty major shifts in the districts, or will they look a lot like they do now?
They'll look quite a bit like they do now, except and they haven't voted on this. Every time they bring it up, they trot out a new map. And that's another thing that's causing strife within the Republican caucus down in the legislature. Every time they bring up the redistricting bill, someone has changed the map, and no one had any notice, and nobody knows what it means. But they're going to keep the North Alabama section, you know, just right across the top of the state, is going to be in 5. The big changes are going to be down around Birmingham, where they're going to make the 3rd district a little more Republican, take some Republicans out of the 6th and put them into the 3rd. They're going to take some of Montgomery out of the 3rd. They're going to run the 7th. In addition to stretching from Birmingham almost to Mobile. It's now going to stretch over and get some of Montgomery. So it's really going to be a funky-looking district, and that's our majority-minority district. But they're shoring up support for Mike Rogers in the third and Martha Roby in the second. And they're also getting some Democratic voters out of the fifth to help Mo Brooks out. So the changes, we're going to have really solid Republican districts, I think, and then one really funky Democratic district.
So the two districts that were previously held by Democrats, Bud Kramer's seat, Bobby Bright's seat, that flipped this past time, one through party change, one through the election of Martha Roby, they're having to secure those. And I do know that the Mike Rogers district, they kind of felt could be a swing district in the correct year, but they can't really touch Terry Sewell in the partisan side. I guess in the primary she might be vulnerable, but not in the general. So they can't get her, so they have to pack one.
They're going to pack even more minority voters into Sewell's district.
Yes, and okay, Tim, did you have a point or did you have a question?
No, I was just going to say that's a typical – this is Catherine, a typical strategy, you know, strengthen, let the Democrats have one strong district and then weaken the Democratic support in other districts.
Exactly.
You know, that's what they do here.
You kind of got to have that.
Here.
Now, one article I did find interesting was it was a national article, and it wasn't about Huntsville or about Alabama, but it was talking about how voters that have a science background, if you will, are so much more likely to be Democrats. It's like 80-something to the teens, you know, 83-17 are more likely to be Democratic voters. And then, of course, you have Huntsville, which probably has the highest population of scientists or science-based voters in the entire South. And so to me it'll be interesting to see if those trends are so powerful that even with some Republican gerrymandering, that science leaning towards Democrats still overpowers that district and, you know, brings it back for the Democrats. Any chance that might happen, or is there still too much other territory around Huntsville?
Well, Huntsville votes Republican. And I don't know if it's the engineers or what, and I am an engineer. It seems to me that it has to do with defense funding. Everybody here seems to just have a knee-jerk reaction that Republicans will keep the defense money flowing. And if they get serious about cutting the deficit, and, you know, Mo Brooks has not been as good about keeping the money coming as Bud Kramer was, or even as Parker Griffith was. So that could get interesting. And Huntsville has no use for ideologues. It's all about the money. It's keeping the federal pipeline open from Washington D.C. to Madison County. You know, keep those millions coming down here. That's what runs this place.
Yeah, although
but then they probably go home at night and they probably go home at night and complain about the deficit.
Exactly, they do.
Yep, just like the teachers you're mentioning, if you depend on a government check, if you will, be it a teacher's salary or defense contracts in Huntsville, you have to figure out who's actually wanting to spend money on you sometimes, and I think there are a lot of voters that are pretty short-sighted there. Well,
and there's a lot of retirees here, too, actually, because taxes are low, and a lot of people who have served here in the military or whatever come back and retire here. So the Medicare business is a complete wild card.
Yes, that'll come up too. Well, Sherry, there's one thing. Since you're the Alabama expert and we see these different stories that catch our interest, is there anything else going on in Alabama that we should ask about?
Oh, well, there's just all the craziness in the legislature, which is probably the same as what's going on in every other state. How many abortion bills do y'all have in Georgia? I've lost count of the ones here. And the immigration bills, you know, it's like it's going to be illegal to even look at a brown person pretty soon.
Right.
If you see one bleeding by the side of the road,
don't. We passed a bad one here. But, you know, our legislature's done for the year, so we have that to be thankful for. They'll have to come back for the budget, but they can't do any more serious damage this year anyway.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, luckily they're not as organized.
Could I jump in with a question right quick?
Go ahead, Tim.
This is about a story I saw on the National Wires. There's a town over there in Walker County called Cordova.
Mm-hmm.
And they were hit really hard by the tornadoes. I think several people were killed there last month. But I saw a story just in passing where they actually, the town banned FEMA trailers for all the homeless people over there. Do you have any idea what that's about?
Yeah.
Right.
And I believe it's the mayor that you should lay the blame at his feet for this. He says that FEMA trailers are just not the kind of housing they want. It would drive their property values down, and that's not the kind of people they're trying to attract to Cordova. So if your house got blown away in Cordova, they're basically, you know, pulling up the welcome mat for you, telling you to go live somewhere else.
Can I just make a comment how crazy that sounds?
I know. We blogged about that. One of my associates that left in Alabama wrote a really nice post about, these are yuppie wannabes in this little bitty town. With the average income is not great, and I'm assuming the average standard of living is not all that wonderful. But no, you can't put a FEMA trailer on your lot while you rebuild your home, because it might hurt property values.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying, look, we want to have zoning to plan our community properly, that's one thing long term. But if somebody wants to have a roof over their head while they rebuild their brick home to make the three little pigs proud, there are exceptions to your, I won't say well-intentioned, but your long-view intentioned thoughts. I mean, you could say, hey, you can't keep your FEMA trailer on here for more than 24 months, 18 months, whatever period. So it's just not being rigid and totally inflexible. Well, Sherry, I want to thank you for coming on the Kudzu Vine and letting us know about Alabama politics, the representative over in Sullivan, and redistricting and everything else.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoy it every time I get to talk with y'all.
Thank you very much. Here.
Thank you, Sherry.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. Well, good to hear about Alabama and maybe some Republican legislators coming to their senses and saying enough of this right-wing Tea Party ideological agenda is enough. And so more people need to be brave like the Representative Bowman over there in Alabama. Well, I think we were talking about Herman Cain, and Tim, you had kind of said your piece on Nate Silver, covered him in the New York Times. Catherine, are you surprised that pizza mogul Herman Cain is being seen as somewhat viable by New York Times and Nate Silver?
I'm not, and I think a lot of it has, somewhat to do with Mike Huckabee not running and Donald Trump fizzling out, because I think there's some similar people are attracted to Herman Cain, excuse me, as are attracted were attracted to Donald Trump and Mike Huckabee. So I think he's sort of another alternative for some of the Tea Party people and some of the more what's the word? Easy, no. the kind of populist conservatives that are really not populist, but that's how they identify themselves. They're not populist in the way that we think of populist, I guess. But I agree that there's little chance that he could get the nomination, partly because he's never run for elected office and he's bound to stumble between now and when, you know, all the primaries and caucuses come up. But he might be able to get some of that agenda addressed in this period before, you know, the field really narrows.
Yes. Well, I tell you what, this past week I decided, you know, if this guy's making so much noise and people are giving so much attention, and he's always described as a pizza mogul, and, you know, I told you that back when I was a boy, basically, I mean, you know, we're talking a long time ago, that I remember some Godfather's Pizza commercials, and I thought, well, you know, maybe they just never opened those in Clayton County where I grew up, and they never had them in Rome where I've lived as an adult. So I thought, you know, these Godfather pizzas are obviously big somewhere in Georgia, since Herman Cain's the godfather of Godfather's Pizza. So I did a little research. I went on their website. Website looked like they probably a pretty decent-sized chain. I did a little search for a location. I guess how many pizza locations Godfather's Pizza has in Herman Cain's home state of Georgia? Y'all want to guess?
I'll say three.
Three. Camper, you are so generous.
I was going to say about a dozen.
Man, Tim has got some real confidence in Herman. There is one location to get some Godfather's Pizza in Georgia. Now, if you want some Godfather's Pizza, you need to go to Villa Rica, Georgia. Now, if you want to get your menu and sit down in Villa Rica, nothing wrong with Villa Rica. They saying about Villa Rica. That's
almost Alabama, though.
Western Georgia.
I mean,
but
it's
close to Alabama. But they actually have more locations in Alabama. But they, if you want to go to Villa Rica and sit out and eat with your menu and get your Godfather's Pizza brought to your table, you can't do that. It's a truck stop location. So if you want some Godfather's Pizza from pizza mogul Herman Cain, you drive down to Villa Rica, stop at this truck stop, and they'll get you one. It's probably frozen out of a box. It's probably slightly more preparation than a Geno's. You can get you one. But I'll go ahead and tell you, I think the three of us need to make a commitment. The next time one of us is in Villa Rica, Georgia, we need to stop at this truck stop, get us a slice of Godfather's Pizza, and review it for everybody in Radio Land. Next time y'all are in Villa Rica, Georgia, can you make that commitment?
Yeah, I can definitely make that commitment.
I don't have plans to go to Villa Rica either, but if I'm going through, if I'm headed towards LaGrange or, you know, Auburn, Alabama, I don't know where I'd be going, but if I go through Villa Rica, I'll go to this truck stop and get me a slice of pizza. And Tim, you said you would too?
Okay,
I'll tell you another one. Herman Cain, if you'll agree to come to the Kudzu Vine, we can actually broadcast the show. I don't know if Tim and Catherine will, but I'll commit to going down to the truck stop in Villa Rica, Georgia, and interviewing you live at the center place, the crown jewel of the Georgia Godfather's Pizza operation. So I just don't know, but I think pizza mogul may be a strong term. Truck stop pizza owner. Earlier, I think, Catherine, you said there's no there, talking about another topic.
Yeah.
When it comes to this big pizza empire, I don't think there's any there. At least there's no there in Georgia. So I just don't know. Well, let's move on to something else. And since we're having a little fun, I noticed in Politico magazine this week, they had a feature on their click page talking about the Huckabee Easy tribute band and how this whole band would write songs about Mike Huckabee. They would begin to open at locations for him. They would get invited to all these Republican events. These people had a budding music career happening, and Mike Huckabee just went and ripped it all away. And you can go to this fellow's YouTube page, youtube.robinsmatt, and he has all kinds of songs. Tim, what were some of your favorites?
Oh, well, my personal favorite was a little number called What Would Huck Do? Now, would you like to know why it was my favorite?
Because I think I cover CeeLo Green's Blank You, or is that a different
What Would Hunt Do was the name of the song. This video, if you watch it, it brings back to me memories of crummy lounge bands and watered down drinks at the local Holiday Inn lounge that I used to frequent when I was younger. Generally, when a fast song like this was played, there was, you know, always a drunk guy that looked like Dick Van Dyke that would stagger out on the floor, and security would throw him out, and that would be the highlight of the night for everybody. So that, you need to ring that one up and watch it, David. It's a keeper, okay?
Yeah, I mean, you have Huckabee Easy. I mean, there's a whole, and what's crazy is, you know, you can see one guy writing these crazy songs and playing them, but there's like five of these people. I mean, they're like halfway to Earth, Wind, and Fire as far as the numbers. Catherine, what did you make of these people?
Well, I have to admit, I did not watch all the videos, but I actually think it's pretty funny. I did watch Huckabee, you know, the one that's based on the Eagles song, Take It Easy.
Huckabee Easy. And that's
Huckabee
the one that
Easy.
The band gets their name from. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And, you know, it was clever. I think it's funny. I mean, you know, I was a huge Dean supporter and did all kinds of crazy stuff to support Dean. So I can understand how, you know, people get very excited and enthusiastic about a candidate. I totally get that. So I guess it's kind of charming and cute in a silly kind of way. I'm sure it makes Mike Huckabee feel good. You know, it must be kind of rewarding to see these. I mean, they're kind of young, aren't they? They still seemed like they were like under 35.
Yeah, but they're apparently their parents. You know, because they have like these two babies, you know, doing all these baby achievements, which I kind of thought was strange that all of this was mixed into their channel. I kind of thought, I don't know that I'd want all these random strangers looking at pictures of my daughter rolling over for the first time and everything else. Amazingly, one of those, Lila Becomes Aware of Her Hand, only has 4 views. I mean, a cute little baby finding their hand. I may become the 5th viewer. I mean, I was so pulled into it, but I just thought it was so amazing that they've gotten the notoriety, which Politico, one of the leading online political news sources, is covering these people, you know, like they're the next, you know, Herman Cain pizza moguls. Well, so, David, the thing is, though, the a little sidebar to all this is, you know, Governor Huckabee is himself a pretty good musician, a bass player. Well, somebody brought this band to his attention 3 years ago, and he actually had them open for him at a rally in South Carolina. I bet that just made these people's decade. You know it?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, because the people know we love this kind of stuff. I mean, we have played Vote Miss Angela on the show. We've played the Hank Johnson song. Tim, I know that's one of your favorites. You know, I mean, we could make an iTunes playlist about all this, you know, strange political music that we've talked about over the years. I mean, we practically have Dick Clark's whole radar record going with all these different political songs. So, hey, we're not criticizing. Please keep it coming. I mean, if you got a Newt Gingrich song, you know, Michelle Bachmann song, you know, even some random state rep somewhere, you know, sing it and send us an MPEG of it. We'll play it on the show. If I had my converter and some more time, I'd try to convert some of this stuff so we could listen to it. But, you know, it's topical for us. Well, we've got about 12 minutes left in the show, and we've still got some big stories to discuss. Somebody we have not discussed in forever, even though she is like Miss, you know, reality show TV these days, Sarah Palin has made a big move. She moved from Alaska to Arizona. Now, had the people of Arizona known that if the hockey team would have gone to Winnipeg, she might not have come,
They might have let that hockey team, the Coyotes, go to Arizona. I'm sorry, go to Winnipeg, but nevertheless, they kept them, and so I guess she was ready to, you know, hockey down there since she loves the hockey so much. But they say that this is this big thing, meaning she's running for president. And when I think of power base to run for president of the United States, Arizona didn't come to mind. Because certainly, you know, Barry Goldwater and John McCain have won the nomination from Arizona, but that's all they won. And it's not like the Arizona base of operations was the magic component. I think Northern Virginia or Baltimore, Maryland, if I'm trying to, you know, get in with the base of power, if you will, if I'm making this big move to the lower 48. Tim, Sarah Palin, she running?
Perhaps. Now, I'm just going to throw this out there as a theory. Perhaps she moved down to Scottsdale not to run for president, but to run for the U.S. Senate. You know, John Kyle is retiring. So that seat's going to be open. Maybe the move is simply to establish residency there so that she can run for the U.S. Senate. What do you think?
I'd have to look at all of the different states in which she could move, because I don't think Arizona is the best fit if I can look at any of the 50 states. Now, it may be the best fit of the open House seats, or I'm sorry, the open Senate seats. So I don't know. And she seems like she doesn't necessarily want to be one of 100, if you will, because the governor, she was one of 50, and she was the chief executive. Catherine, what do you think of Sarah Palin running and or this Senate run Tim's proposing?
Well, it occurred to me that she might be looking to run for something else other than president, Senate, Congress. I didn't look specifically at, you know, who was retiring or anything. It just occurred to me that that might be on her mind. I suspect, you know, she's also launching this bus tour, I guess. It may have even already started across the country, including some, you know, like Pennsylvania, Ohio, you know, all the places that you would expect her to go. I suspect that she's waiting to decide after she does this tour, you know, look at, you know, what the reaction is, what, you know, as she's going across the country, I'm sure she'll be meeting with potential donors and checking to see what, how it looks for her. And then I assume she'll make a decision at some point shortly thereafter, but I just don't see how she prevails in the nomination or certainly in the election. But, you know, I've been wrong about these things a lot.
Yeah, and
I just don't see
the bus
her
tour.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I just don't see her as, you know, qualified candidate. But, you know, I've heard somebody on the radio, you know, sometimes I listen to right-wing talk radio for some reason, and I hear people say all the time, you know, she's more qualified than President Obama because she was, you know, governor of Alaska. I think, did they not see her when she ran for vice president? Like, what did I miss that she's more qualified? But
yeah, I mean, if you're governor of Alaska and you attack the job in a serious manner and you don't quit on it, I think governor of Alaska could be a fine qualification. But the way she served, that's a different matter. And obviously, being able to look out of your door and see the outskirts of Russia, I don't know if that helps, even with a good pair of binoculars.
I got to be honest. Were I advising Governor Palin, or half-term Governor Palin, or whatever she was, I'd tell her, no, don't do it. She's making stupid mistakes, which is nothing new for her. Do you know on this bus tour, she's going to have this grand finale up in New Hampshire. Did you know that she did not even inform the Republican Party of New Hampshire that she was coming?
Oh, my gosh, you're kidding.
Come on.
Oh,
that is as amateurish as it gets. You can't go
as
a lone
wolf if they're not Facebook friends with her, Tim. If they're not following her Twitter account,
She let them know. And it's just their fault that they're not a friend of her on Facebook, because that's the way Sarah informs people. Come on. Give us a break.
Oh,
but then
I tell her,
speaking of the bus tour, the bus tour is just part of the rollout.
She has got the movie coming out. And apparently the movie is not premiering in Hollywood. It's not premiering in the District of Columbia. It's premiering in Iowa. And that does
seriously look like a big sign that she's running. But, you know, that's coming out pretty soon. So I thought I'd play a little game with each of y'all. I just pulled up the, you know, the movie theaters in Rome, trying to figure out some names of movies. And I want to see if y'all would rather see the movie I name or the Sarah Palin movie. Catherine, I'll go to you first. There's a movie called Rio with two talking cartoon birds. If I gave you a free ticket, you could see the two talking cartoon birds, Rio, or the Sarah Palin movie. Which are you going to?
Can I bring my iPad with me?
Oh, you can bring whatever. Your cell phone, your iPad, you can bring notes.
Okay,
I'll
go see Rio.
You'll go see Rio. Okay. Tim, there's one called Jumping the Broom about a bunch of bridesmaids and somebody's going to get married in a whirlwind romance of long stem roses. Apparently, it's even two movies in one, Downtown, Uptown. That or the Sarah Palin movie, what do you think?
Okay, if I don't have to buy popcorn, I'll go see Jumping the Broom, okay?
Okay.
I can't afford the concession stand. So.
Sarah is 0-2, and
right.
I'll tell you what, I have seen Kung Fu Panda 1 and thought it was one of the dumbest movies. My kids love it, and I will take them to see Kung Fu Panda 2 twice if I don't have to see the Sarah Palin movie. So I think we're 3-3 in that the Sarah Palin movie does not have a real target audience with the three of us, but then are you shocked? So, yeah. Now, speaking of movies that are coming out, now there is the Game Change movie, and of course, you know, there might be a little bit about Senator McCain. There might be a little bit about Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. There might be a little bit about President Obama. But you all know why this movie got made. This movie got made for the chapter or two about John Edwards and his scandals. That's what, you know, makes cinema magic. And so John Edwards is in the news again. People are talking about bringing charges against him, indictments, and it said he circled with his camp. I don't know who exactly is in the John Edwards camp. I mean, if he called you up and said, hey, come be in my camp, Tim and Catherine, y'all joining in on that?
Not me.
Or being a camp. Not y'all. Okay, I didn't think so. I don't know why anybody would tie that anchor to their neck politically, but he's making news. Although a lot of people are saying, you know, his reputation's gone. Why are they coming out after him criminally? Catherine, what do you think about this whole John Edwards situation and the newest twist it's taken?
Well, I mean, I understand people who say, you know, there's a lot more important things for the Justice Department to be focusing on, and, you know, there's a lot of other crimes. But, you know, he did miss the allegations are that he misused campaign funds to support his mistress and the baby. And, you know, that is a serious lack. It shows a serious lack of responsibility to the donors to his campaign. So I do think that it's worth pursuing if we're going to continue to have our election supported by individual donors like me, you and me and Tim, and then if we want to maintain that trust, then when they do break the law, we sort of have to go after them. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
I think it instills more further trust in the process if when people do it, you know, do the wrong thing, they get busted for it.
Yes. Tim, your thoughts.
Well, let me pose this to you, David, and ask you about it. If this guy is, I don't know, a candidate for the state senate or something, we're probably looking at a simple plea bargain. I don't know, fine, maybe a little bit of time or something, or I don't know. and it would cause barely a ripple and it would go away. Do you think that they are going after John Edwards because he's a high-profile target?
Probably that's part of it, his profile. I think you made a great point there. And I'll just say, how dumb is this, in that if you're a multimillionaire, I mean, we know the guy's one of the wealthiest politicians around, why in the world was he not able to pay for this out of his own personal funds? And he is a lawyer. He knows the legal system.
Yeah,
I mean, it was just completely dumb. Well, something that came to my attention while the show was on, I think right about the time we were in the back half of the Sherry interview, I saw that Reverend Happy Lee passed away this past week on the 26th. And I just thought I'd bring it to attention because not a lot of people know Happy Lee, but he was actually the person that preceded me as 11th District Chair. And he was as hard a worker as you'll ever find. He brought the Polk County Democratic Party back from nothing when he moved back to Georgia from upstate New York. And he worked with both John and Robert Kennedy. He was a preacher that would speak out against the Klan. He was friends with Thurgood Marshall. With Martin Luther King, helped implement some Civil Rights Act policies. This was a guy that was a white Southerner who was so far ahead of his time on racial issues. I mean, just light years ahead, and believed in democratic principles and progressive justice as much as anybody you'll ever find. The amount of life he packed into 89 years is just unfathomable, and he passed away, and I wanted to send my condolences on the kudzu vine and let a little people know a little bit about his great life. Tim, if you want to say a word too, you can.
Happy Lee was a mentor to me and a friend to me. We based what we did in Chattooga County on what he was able to accomplish in Polk County. He was a great man, and I second everything you said, David.
Yep, and Catherine, I don't know if you know about Happy Lee, but I will send you a link to the obituary. And actually, there's probably no need to do this. I'll give credit where credit's due. Mr. Joe Prince actually linked it, the obituary, comments to something else on Blog for Democracy. And good job to Joe for doing that. And if you're listening to this show, I think it's in the Rashad Taylor Post, which I guess if it somehow it could be aggregated out of there and put in a proper place, then people can read about his life because I've seen, press releases go out for people probably, I mean, honestly, of less note or importance to the Democratic causes than Happy Lee. So obviously he deserves no less. But hate to end it on that note, but it's been the Kudzu Vine. Thanks again to Sherry.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Night, everybody.
We are.